Welcome to another episode of That's So Cincinnati. Jason Williams, Sherry Coolidge, Silent Phil, as always on the ones and twos, wearing his Brink Brewing stocking hat. Looking good. Two people in this room are wearing stocking hats and one is not.
You don't think I wanted to mess up my hair, did you?
I didn't think you did. I didn't think you did, no. Anyway, a special guest today. We're sitting here in our studio right now, and our podcast setup is right next to our TV video setup, and our Bengals folks are doing a special show. I think they're doing more stuff this week because obviously we know what the Bengals are doing, and we have about a dozen of these really super bright lights, and it's usually really dark when we're in here recording, and so I'm feeling a little off right now because I got a spotlight right in my face.
Wait a second.
No, you don't need to turn them off.
Wait a second. Phil, I thought those were on for me. No.
I thought they were on for Sherry too. But anyway, thanks for joining us again. Our special guest is, finally I get to him.
Speaking of Bengals.
Former Bengals wide receiver, Tim McGee, who also co-hosts the post-game show on 700 WLW after every Bengals game. Going to have him on. He was on the Super Bowl team in 1989, wide receiver, scored a touchdown. But
where were you in 1989, Jason?
I was in eighth grade. I was that year at that point, February of 89. I was in eighth grade. Where were you? You were a sophomore.
I was in high school. And if we went to NFL games, because I lived in Youngstown, we went to the Steelers.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it closer to go to the Steelers?
Yeah, the Browns Stadium was like an hour and a half away maybe, and the Pittsburgh like 45 minutes.
Huh. I never realized it. I knew Youngstown was close to Pittsburgh. I didn't realize it was closer to Pittsburgh than it is
where we live.
Cleveland.
Where we live.
Downtown Boardman. Boardman Township. The home of Sharon Turco and Bernie Kosar.
Correct. Anyway, I did get to meet Bernie Kosar.
One of my favorites growing up, Bernie Kosar. Anyway, before we jump over and bring on Tim McGee, thank you, Phil, for shutting the door as people are chattering out in the hallway. Let's talk about the congressional race between Greg Landsman and Steve Shabbat. Landsman's in. He raised $250,000 in his first week on the campaign. And certainly sent a message, I think, to the rest of the Democrats who might be thinking about getting in. It's like, you might want to think twice about that because Greg's got a lot of endorsements and a lot of money already. And that was the whole point, is that he could make a big statement quickly and try to box out anyone else just in case the lines get redrawn in favor of the Democrats in the first congressional district. Sherry, what do you got?
By just in case, it seems like that's exactly what's happening right now. We are now in this 10-day waiting period for new maps, and it has so much suspense built into it. I can remember, I have to say, I've been at the Inquirer for a little bit, like 12, 15 years ago. Redistricting has always been a very big deal, but it used to be like this esoteric, like nobody really understood it, like we're going to write a story about it. And people are like, what are you talking about? And honestly, I feel like it is in the collective conscious at this point over the years, just how important it is to who represents where you live, either way. And this has been an edge of your seat, couple of days as we'll wait for these maps. And who would have thought that? But here we are.
Yeah, I think this is my read of it. I think the redistricting commission is going to milk the clock as much as they can, try to run it out. We have a primary in May, and I wouldn't hold your breath if you're a Democrat thinking that you're going to come out of this with a bunch of wins. There might be a few here and there. You certainly, in a fair world, you look at the map and you look at what they did in Hamilton County. We went from splitting it into two districts, now splitting it into three. And clearly, that was all about trying to protect Steve Shabbat and his seat. And especially when you look down in the granular level and look at where they drew the lines and, you know, drawing now Warren Davidson into a chunk of Hamilton County clearly was all about trying to protect the first congressional district for the Republicans. But let's be honest, this is ground zero for the gerrymandering. And in a fair world, this would be the first place that they would point to say, hey, Steve Chabot, we need to redraw that. And, that's the easiest one to do. And that needs to all be contained to the first congressional district needs to be contained to Hamilton County. Not three districts in Hamilton County.
I literally, when I saw the map come out and you're writing about it and Jesse Ballmer and everyone in our Columbus Bureau, like a million stories, I was like, they might as well have said, I dare you. Like, I was so blatant of what the district looked like, but it was like, okay. I mean.
Totally.
All right. Here's my question, Jay. Has anyone heard from Steve Chabot?
No. No, we have not.
Have you heard anything behind the scenes?
We've heard from Steve Chabot just in his, we've heard from his campaign on just their response to Greg Landsman jumping in, but. We haven't heard from any of the congressional leaders on redistricting yet. None of them that I'm aware of, at least in this area, have made any comments on. I don't recall Warren Davidson, Steve Chabot, Brad Winstrup, any of them making comments on where the maps are right now. And I haven't seen a lot even across. I keep pretty good tabs on just this topic, you know, or anywhere across Ohio or across the country anyway. Certainly, generally speaking, Republicans and Democrats have certainly had their say about it, but not necessarily individual members of Congress. I will say this. I need to clarify that Hamilton County is still, it's still too big to be all into one district. But what I'm saying is that one district needs to be in Hamilton County, just Hamilton County. And then you still have some population remaining that would have to go into another district. That's the way it should be. But to then try to split it up into three districts, include Steve Chabot and Warren County and the entire city of Cincinnati, it's clearly not fair. But again, you know, there will be political insiders who will say, ha, 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 that's not what this is about. It's all about politics. Well, yeah, of course it is. But our job is to cut through and to write about, you know, and to, my concern is for the citizens and what's fair. And what's fair is that the first congressional district all is included in, I was going to say the county of Hamilton County. So anyway.
Do you think, spinning it forward just a little bit, that Greg Landsman, first of all, it took a while to see who was going to be the Democratic candidate in that district with Steve Chabot being the juggernaut that he is. Mm. Do you think that anyone now will be like, ooh, look at that district and join Greg Landsman in a primary?
It's been very quiet. I thought after last week's news that the Supreme Court 4-3 decision ordered the redistricting commission to go back to the drawing board and do better. I thought there would be more buzz among local Southwest Ohio Democrats. There has not been. I talked to Alicia Reese. That has been the only other potential candidate where there's been any buzz around. I've talked to her several times in the past month, probably at least twice a week since the turn of the new year. And have been asking her this question a lot. Finally, you know, said, hey, can you go on the record and give me what, you know, where are you at on this? And she did. And she's like, at this time, I can't remember her direct quote. I don't have it in front of me. But the gist of her comments were that, you know, right now she's focused on being a commissioner. And my discussions with her ongoing have been that she's very much into being a commissioner. She has a track record in her career of seeing jobs through. She spent her entire four terms in the state house. She spent a long time on city council. You know, she took her time to decide what her next step was after leaving the state house. And then she decided to run for commissioner. So I really believe she wants to see this through. She has now gotten a lot of good press for stepping up and getting the tax rebate, property tax rebate on the stadium deal, and leading the charge on that. And so I'm not saying nobody can change their mind, because look, there, I guarantee you there are people sitting there waiting in the wings. Like, if this thing is redrawn to clearly favor Democrats, no one should be surprised if it becomes like a 4 or 5 person primary for the Democrats, even. It doesn't look that way right now. But again, I think part of why it doesn't look that way is there's a lot of cynicism in the Democratic Party about are they really going to redraw these lines to favor, you know, and again, you talk about gerrymandering, but to put one district into Hamilton County, there's not a lot of confidence there. And I think that's my takeaway from this, from my discussions, is that there's still a lot of cynicism on whether that's really going to happen, even though the Supreme Court said, go draw them better. And you, again, look at this. Have a deadline. And you look at this and you think, okay, well, here's ground zero, the first congressional district. There's still just, there's not this, you know, widespread excitement among local, you know, regional Democrats here in Southwest Ohio, or even in among state Democrats.
I will say the deadline's the deadline.
Because that's right.
We drag this out any longer, then there's going to be talk of moving the primary. Nobody wants to move the primary because of all the state races going on, and like anything can happen right in those races. And so people really want to, on both sides, keep this train on the track,
yeah,
on the straight and narrow track that it's supposed to be on. With, you know, you keep dragging it out, you don't have a district. How can you say, well, the primary has to be the same primary date?
You know, you look at all these different scenarios, and that's a great point. You look at all these different scenarios and you think how, you know, the easy thing would be, okay, so Cuyahoga County, Cleveland, Franklin County, Columbus, they both have Democrat districts in those counties. And so you would think it would be easy to say, all right, you know, the third largest county in the state has become Democrat. Okay, we're going to give you one district in Hamilton County. That'll be the first congressional district. Okay, Democrats, I know you're not fully happy, but okay, we gave a little bit. That would probably be the easiest thing. And again, this, as you well know, Sherry, this can get really complex really quickly. Jesse Ballmer and I talk a lot. Her and I talked a couple weeks ago. You know, we just stay in touch. Our state house reporter. And I just told Jesse, I said, Jesse, you have done fantastic work on this redistricting. And I said that very thing. This is a topic that can get so wonky so fast, and you get down all these different rabbit holes. But she has done a fantastic job on really cutting through all that and telling folks what the important things are, the news, and, you know, cutting through all that and making it to where people can understand and, hey, understand what's important here, what's going on politically. And so, folks, you know, our listeners, I'd encourage you to check out our coverage on redistricting. Just go to Cincinnati.com and search for Jesse Ballmer, Ballmert. And we got all the redistricting coverage on that. She's been all over this story from day one. And, you know, it's going to continue to be on this. So she's covering the day-to-day of that. And anyway, we'll get rolling on this, because I think it's a very fascinating topic. And when you cut to, you know, it's all about power, and the power in Washington, the power in Columbus, this is at the heart of it. So anyway, let's get away from redistricting, jump over and talk about what everyone wants to talk about in Cincinnati, and that's the Bengals, with former Bengal Tim McGee. All right, special guest time here on the That's So Cincinnati podcast, and pleased to welcome to the podcast, the timing couldn't be better, to have former Bengals wide receiver, member of the 1989 Super Bowl winning team, Tim McGee. Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Life is great.
And we also, I should say, catch Tim on the post-game show on 700 WLW after every game, along with Chick Ludwig. You've been doing that for 5 years. And Tim, do we have to, I mean, do you have to pinch yourself seeing where this team is now? You were on that 91 team as your career was winding down at that point, but you were on that last, the team that won the last postseason game. And did you ever, after that, did you ever think it was going to take 30 years to win another one?
You know, going in, I would say after that game and during my career, you know, the playoffs were a standard, but it was a minimum standard. I mean, yeah. We were, you know, our aspirations were Super Bowl. So then obviously once we got there in 89, it was to go back and win the Super Bowl, which obviously never happened. But from that point on, walking off the field in that playoff game, you don't even look that far. I mean, it's more like a 1 year or a 12-month thought process where, okay, things are, we'll be better next year and better next year and better next year. And when you start adding those ones up and then they start multiplying by twos and threes and fours and fives, and, you know, you're looking 31 years later that, you know, things hadn't really gone the way that the organization and the players would like. It was relatively surprising, to say the least.
Do you, you look at this team right now, and I want to talk about you and just what you've been up to, even away from broadcasting and football, just to let folks know, hey, you know, what have you been up to? Because there's, you know, still so many fans who, you know, I think keep up. And I think, well, let me ask you this. We'll jump around a little bit, but I think one of the things that I'm noticing about this team, and I want to see what your perspective is on it, is you've been around, you've lived here, you're doing broadcasting. Are the Bengals doing a much better job of embracing former players, their past? How have you seen that evolve? I just really wanted to get your perspective on that.
Well, I guess I'm rather honest. So the answer to that question would be no. I think they, and rightfully, in my opinion, rightfully so, because they should be focused on the current and getting that current situation turned around before they can worry about a bunch of old fuddy-duds like myself. So, you know, former players always, there's a fine line between management and former players, because former players, you know, feel entitled. And obviously the management is running a business, and it just so happened to be humans be the assets. But just like any other business, if you have things in perspective, in my very strong opinion, you know, the former P&Gers, the former GE employees, they don't expect to go back to their former employees and be given something or be honored in any way, shape, or form. So that's always been my mentality. And that's why we had contracts, and it was, I didn't owe them anything after, they didn't owe me anything after. If they share loyalty, I would share loyalty. You know, it's a typical, a situation of which, you know, I think we have to be fair to both sides. I put myself on the Brown family side and say, you know, yeah, you know, players always, they want more, more, more. Former players want more, more, more. And if you were able to give them everything they wanted, there will be no season tickets for fans.
So, yeah.
You know, you could do something for them. And I think, you know, on a scale of 0 to 10, yeah. 10 is a little bit too much. 0 is not enough. If somehow, some way you can meet at the 5-ish, I think both sides can be more content. But right now, I don't think that relationship, although I don't think that relationship is negative, I just don't think it's where it should be.
Yeah, and I'm really, that's great stuff. And like, because you hear about it a lot, and you know, obviously where they're at right now, they're in the playoffs and everything, but generally, you know, it seems like it comes up every offseason. And it's like, you know, the Steelers and the Packers are so great about embracing their history and bringing their former players back. And it's like, oh, then you get to the Bengals and it's like, oh, they're terrible at it. And, you know, they started this Ring of Honor. And I just, you know, you living here, broadcasting, keeping close tabs on it, just want to get your take on that. That was great stuff. And I think that's very interesting about, you're right, like, I think about my former employers, like, I don't go back there and expect anything, or, you know, like old newspapers I worked at, or I can't just walk in the room and be like, oh, everybody bow down and, oh, it's great to see you. You know, like, I don't even know people there now. But, yeah.
Or a free subscription.
Right.
You know, you just, when, and the problem is there's a small segment of players, just like any other business, that spoil it, in my opinion, for everyone else. Their levels of expectations are much higher than the Bengals can actually reach. And I get it, you know. If we have a reunion, we have something, and the Bengals say, hey, I'm going to give you 2 tickets and some Bengal bucks. Well, yeah, be thankful for the tickets. You can complain about the Bengal bucks, but, you know, and the major problem, I think, is for people like myself who's had a taste of other organizations, the comparison analysis, therefore, kind of amplifies or magnifies it to a degree where, you know, you compare the Cleveland Browns when their old players go back, they get paid appearances, they make thousands of dollars, so on and so forth. And that's pretty much across the board, like in Washington, they embrace you, sideline passes, like whatever. And, it, you know, the Bengals are, and you have to understand, who you played for. They're more conservative at nature. Mm-hmm. And so I think you should lower your bar of expectations and accept them who they are.
But so one of the reasons when I was thinking about who would be a good guest this week was I'm wondering what they're feeling. And I almost feel like I'm looking at it from like a mother's perspective, because these young men are in the spotlight like they've never been before. And there's a lot of like hopes and dreams like pinned on them. And I'm just wondering like what they're feeling. Do they feel that? Are they just in their, you know, practice playing bubble? Do you let that get into your head? Can you talk to us about how you felt going into this kind of game?
Well, number one, pressure is for people in the stands. Remember, we're, as a player, you're doing the same thing you've done since the 8th grade, 7th grade, or whenever you started playing football. So the situations, they don't change. They don't get bigger in the moment. You know, you stay in the moment, and you're, and in this particular group, when you look at them, they're having fun. I mean, this is what they do. And, you know, I have themed throughout the radio show. Number one, from a team's perspective, I said this was the year of expectation. And I said, from the player's standpoint, they don't know what they don't know, because they haven't been poisoned or by the toxins of what yesterday's history. So, you know, this group led by Joe Burrow, you know, as they get prepared for a game, it's just another game. And when you look at the rosters, you know, T. Higgins has been in the national championship, Joe Burrow, obviously, Jamar Chase, so on and so forth. So, you know, these guys are, they come from winning programs and traditions. So, you know, the moment is not bigger than it can be for some people that can't handle it. And with that being said, you know, let's just face it, they did win a wild card game. And when you keep things in perspective, like I try to do, okay, Baltimore had a plethora of injuries. So did Cleveland. Pittsburgh was on the down year that we knew. The Bengals took advantage of their opportunity, or window of opportunity, I should say. But, you know, now, yeah, they were expected to beat the Las Vegas Raiders from, and I look at it is, okay, now it's time to, you know, now you got to step up to the plate. So now the pressure, if you will, for lack of a better term, you know, the pressure is now going to be there, because now they're not expected to win, and they faced an opponent that is just as healthy as they are, and maybe just as talented, built a different way, different style of football, but a very solidly coached football team. They're playing on the road. So, you know, this is a test. And so far this year, for the most part, the Bengals have not just met the test. They, you know, they've aced it. So we'll see.
Let me ask you, okay, so how important is a positive attitude? Because I do think that part of the excitement that we're all feeling as fans is emanating from Joe Burrow, who's like, we've got this. Like, he is so confident and positive about everything. And you can hear it in his, not only his words, but his tone in those after press conferences. I don't even know who I am right now. I'm sorry. Like, I have watched all of this. Like, you would think I was the biggest football fan ever in the history of the world. But how important is, like, this attitude?
Well, your attitude is built around your confidence level, and your confidence level is built around your success or their lack of. Obviously, they've tasted success, and they went out with nothing to lose from the coaching staff on through the players. And what they were able to do is use that confidence as momentum to carry them through and through and through. And when we all have nervousness, only thing that's really going to help you is the person next to you and that band of brothers and that confidence factor that when you don't believe or you do have that seed of doubt, you do not let confidence does not let that grow. And this team is very confident and they have a confident and, you know, it's one hell of a combination when you have a skill set that Joe Burrow possessed and the confidence that he possessed, you know, that just magnifies itself and it goes to the locker room like plague, just like negativism did for the last 30 years. So all you got to do is just look at what side of the coin there is when things were negative and the culture was negative. Well, the results were losses. Now, by the same token, you know, you have confidence and the locker room and the records are doing well.
So, okay. So, all right. So that's attitude. How important is it that that stadium is filled with excited Bengals fans? If you're playing on that field, do you notice what's happening in the stands? Like what, how important is us showing up for that as the fan base?
Yes and no. And here's what fans bring. Number one, it's like anything else. You're sleeping in your bed. You're comfortable. You know, if you're in your own home, if you need to go to the bathroom, you know, you can close your eyes and 7 steps, you're there. So the comfort zone of having all these things in place, they just add up to a better experience, a more comfortable experience to help you go out and execute your game plan. By the same token, when the number of fans doesn't matter because the players don't look in the stands and count and see unless there's just a dramatically empty stadium that players don't notice it. But what you do notice, you notice it more so on defense and big plays than offense. And that's when, you know, your fans can really come into play. The atmosphere, I think, more in general can come into play because you just know things. I tell you, just simple things as the lighting, where the lighting is, how, you know what affects you when you're trying to catch a ball or throw a ball. You know what, I remember at the old Riverfront Stadium, and, you know, that was dinosaur years ago, that we knew that the crown of second base and a pitcher mound, you know, we knew one was up, one was down. That was a huge advantage to us. We used to run routes where we knew if we got up the hill, so to speak, that we knew the defensive back more than likely, there was a good chance he will stumble. So the comfort zone around being at home, adding with the fans, and the fans in Cincinnati, they're so hungry. They're starved. Yeah. You know, they're malnutrition when it comes to excitement and wins. And now that they have it, you know, that atmosphere at the last game against the Raiders, man, that was second only to the Super Bowl year that I've experienced. And I had a bird's eye view. I had a bird's eye view from the play, from the press box, but I also was on the field, during the last play of the game outside of the step now. That it was like, man, the crowd just roared. And I can tell you, that does give players energy.
Well, you just basically took, I was getting ready to ask you that very thing. Like, you've seen the height of Bengal fandom from your time when you played. And you know, I think you hit it there. It's like, you know, how does what we're seeing now, the excitement, the energy, the turnout, you know, compare to that time period when you played?
Well, it's different. And if we're going to compare, we have to compare, say, the Super Bowl year versus this year. Right now, there's no comparison because the stadium was like that every single week. There were no surprises. No, we were rock stars. And the era is different, guys. And here's why. Back then, we were the only, when I say game in the town, it was us and the Reds. And our home base got to see, feel, and touch us because we were part of the local and regional community.
Yeah.
Well, now, these guys are more global. You know, with social media, everybody knows them. So fans may not be as hungry as they were to meet and greet us. I can just remember times back during the Super Bowl year, especially towards the latter part when it looked like we were in the playoffs and deep in the playoffs. off. And of course, once we were going to the Super Bowl, we were treated like, you know, it was that if you're going to dinner, you got to make sure you have reservations, sit in the back, be, you know, and, you know, you've always got that, that favorable line of athletes or entertainers or whoever you may be, celebrities or whatever, where, you know, excuse me, sir, I don't really want to bother your dinner, but can I have, well, you're actually bothering my dinner, but nevertheless, yes, but it was just rock star treatment. And when you compare the two, I don't think they've gotten there yet. And I will say this, there's nothing more exciting than being erased and being irrelevant when there's been a 30 plus year gap between success. Trust me, I wish we could stop talking about the 1989 Super Bowl and the 1981 Super Bowl. We need to be erased, deleted. We need to be talking about what happened this year and in 2022 and 2023. That's when for me personally, that's when I really get excited. I want to be part of the used to be as opposed to the current.
Where was the Super Bowl the year that you guys were in?
Miami, Florida. Miami, Florida. Joe Robbie Stadium.
Well, Tim, as your co-host on WLW says, you're a prince in gym shoes. Really appreciate you joining us here today. And, well, you know what, here, we got jumped around here. What, away from football, you know, you played, what have you, you do the broadcasting thing. What's been life like away from football? You know, you still live here. You're originally from Cleveland. I know you've talked on the air about you've been going back and forth from Florida. What's life away from football for you?
Life is wonderful for me. You know, on the only downside, and I'll talk about it first, is, you know, I suffer from the normal, you know, problems that you have with the memory and the knees and all that kind of stuff. Mm. And other than that, my life is wonderful. You know, I've been married for 35 years now to my wife, Mickey, or Yolanda is her official name. And I have three, obviously beautiful kids, daughters that, you know, high achievers, you know, from, you know, attended Erskine there and went on to the University of Kentucky, Ohio U, two master's degree. I have one that went to Princeton University, now is in medical school at Emory University. So, you know, life has been, you know, I couldn't have wrote a better script for my life. So, you know, it's been an entrepreneur and owning different businesses and being successful in that and just taking things one day at a time and, you know, being just thankful and being able to, you know, pass some of the blessings along. And it's just been storybook. You know, we all face our adversities, and it's just a matter of building that character and how you rebuild from that or rebound from that. I'm sorry. But, you know, I enjoy it. I enjoy covering the Bengals. I enjoy, you know, I enjoy the truth and honesty. And, one of the reasons I know WLW and WLWT and the other outlets have me on is because I have a reputation of calling things like they are. Yep. And, you know, I'm just a truth driven person, and, you know, and I'm willing to suffer the consequences and or the accolades that comes with that. And, you know, it's just a perspective. And, but, you know, getting back to my life is just been, you know, it's been wonderful.
You were away from football. Obviously, you raised your kids and your businesses, and you know. But what brought you back? You're in your fifth year doing the post game on WLW. You know, what brought you back to? Did you miss being around football or talking football, or did they just call you up one day and say, "Tim, we'd love to have you"?
I played. Just to give you an idea, I played seven straight years here. I went to Washington. I called Mike Brown and asked if I could return after my 1 year of Washington, although I had a 4 year contract there. Mm-hmm. I was the first Bengal at the time that was able to come back. And, you know, I personally equate that to the conversation I had with him prior to leaving. It was a financial decision and he totally understood. And, you know, I was very transparent with him and, you know, continue to say wonderful things because I think they're deserving of it. So when I never left Cincinnati. So it was always my home. And it was a great point for my family because it was between, you know, 4 hours north of Knoxville, Tennessee, and 4 hours south of Cleveland, Ohio. And when my wife and I, you know, decided to make it, you know, we looked at the school systems, the community. And I mean, I just thought it was wonderful. You know, it's not, you know, as Joe Burrow says, it's not the most exciting place in the world, but you know, nevertheless, you get what you're looking for.
That's we
were
not
looking
a bad
to raise
thing.
A family. Yeah. So, you know, things were, like I said, things went kind of very smooth and, you know, being attached to the community. And I got away from football. Let me just, when I say I got away, I started representing guys and being an agent. And that went phenomenally well. And then when the kids started playing soccer, I built a facility, blah, 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 blah. But the most important thing for me coming back to Cincinnati, as you said, from Washington, was the fact that, you know, I just thought the town had, you know, it's not a town that you, if you rate it on a scale of 1 to 10 in 5 different categories, I think Cincinnati just gets like 8, 8, 8, 8, 8. And that was fine with me. So
yeah.
It's just been a wonderful, experience. But, you know, now that my bones are brittle and they can't take the cold, I come down to Florida in the Fort Lauderdale area in the wintertime and I dodge old man winter, because old man winter and old man McGee, they're not first cousins and they don't get along.
Well, thanks so much for joining us here today. I know you're busy and you got the post game coming up on Saturday, and you know, folks can tune into you and Chick Ludwig. You know, I'm sure he calls you stud about 30 times during the breaks and in your times with him on the air.
Yeah, so. Stud.
I've known Chick for a long time, and what a great guy.
Should I be calling you that, Jason? Is this like a radio thing I don't know about?
This is a Chick. Well, did Chick cover you when you, or was he?
Yeah, he covered.
Okay. Chick, okay. So you've known him since then. Yeah.
Dayton Daily News during my career.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Well, Tim, thanks. We'll be sure to tune in. Just let folks know, hey, you tune in and listen to Tim and Chick on WLW after the game. And I know you guys usually take it for a few hours there. So great stuff. And I greatly appreciate you, Tim, and your style of calling it like it is. Love that. Love and appreciate that.
Okay. And again, I appreciate you guys having me on. It was a wonderful experience. And telling my story is something I don't often do. But when I do it, I try to do it well and do it honestly. And again, I appreciate the opportunity of everyone that gives me, and I appreciate you guys.
All right. Thank you again to Tim McGee for joining us here today. What a great chat with him. Really enjoyed it. Enjoy his perspective on this. You know, as a former Bengal from the glory days of this franchise to where how he's seen it, the good, the bad, and where it is today. So thanks again to Tim McGee, and be sure to check him out on the post game show on 700 WLW after every game. You'll hear him on Saturday night. And speaking of Saturday night, kickoff Saturday in Nashville against the Titans. Sherry, you will be there. This is our Cincinnati, correction, our So Cincinnati moment of the week. Is the moment that Sherry will be there because Sherry is always in the middle of a Cincinnati action? Is that the moment? Whatever it is, Sherry's going to be in Nashville having fun, watching the Bengals. And she's going to tell us about it.
In basically the highest seat you could possibly, like, I'll have to get there, like, maybe, like, 2 hours early to climb up to where I'm sitting. It doesn't matter. I just was really kind of a lot of work to do, things to do, and it feels like a moment in Cincinnati history, and I am here for that. And so I was like, let's go. A group of friends, everybody had, like, a different kind of window into what we were going to do, and I couldn't say no.
You're going to go to Jeff Ruby's in Nashville.
I do not think I'm going to be able to get near there since these plans are just coming together as we speak on Thursday. He understands the momentum of this and what is happening because he's keeping his, as we read in on Cincinnati.com yesterday, he was closing for renovations and he's going to, you know, delay all of that a little bit. So all of the Cincinnati fans can go. And you know what? A story was breaking this morning. Nashville is concerned. The Titans are trying to limit like how you can buy tickets because they're too – I don't know how much that's going to work, to be honest, because everyone already has tickets, it seems like. But they are very concerned that the stadium is going to be overwhelmed with Bengals fans, as they should be, because I feel like that's definitely what's happening. And there's just a groundswell of people who feel like I do, that this is history and they want to see it.
That's insane to think that they are concerned about that with the Bengals. I get it if it were Cowboys or Packers or Steelers, but the fact that it's Bengals is truly shows how hungry I think Cincinnati is for a winner, for this franchise to win.
I wish people would stop underestimating us when it comes to things like bowl games. Notre Dame, overwhelmed. Cincinnati fans. Dallas, Bearcats, overwhelmed. I watched that game on television. More than one time, you heard the announcers say, hold on, the roar is deafening. And that was from the Cincinnati fans. When Cincinnati has this kind of chance, we show up for it. And I expect no different this weekend.
Ooh. There you have it, folks. Sherry is wearing her glasses today. I've always said this, having known Sherry for almost 10 years. When Sherry wears her glasses, she really means business.
I have been working on some writing a little bit for a story that's coming. And when I stare at my screen for such a long time, my eyes were not having my contacts this morning. Or I'm super serious today, whichever.
Anyway, great to see you, Sherry. Great to be back on the podcast. And
same.
We'll look forward to hearing your.
We have some guests lined up.
We do.
I have to tell you, and anyone who's ever been on the podcast knows, we are last minute Louie. He's like, who's going to be the guest in 2 hours? I did some planning this week, and we have some good guests coming up.
And we went last week. We ran the gamut last summer. I think we tried like four people and finally, and appreciate that Eve Bolton joined us and worked out great. And she was a great guest. And if you missed that episode, go back and check that out, because she didn't mince words about her concerns.
Favorite kind of guest.
That's right.
Like it was.
That's exactly right. The school board member, Cincinnati Public Schools. So go back and check that out. And we will catch you next week.